What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Rabbi Rachel Mikva, the 2015 Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar, discussing dangerous religious ideas. We'll also have a visit from our Too Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our Mevina on Israel, Oshrat Barel. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Today is Super Bowl Sunday, a new American holiday if ever one existed. What began as a football championship game has now grown to epic proportions, and it connects our nation in a weirdly complete way that's kind of religious. It almost doesn't matter if the actual football game is any good. Does anybody actually remember that last year's Super Bowl was over by halftime and only got worse as it went on from there? In any case, the Super Bowl is a monumental triumph for the exuberant commercialism of American sports, and, well, America in general. In contrast, we Jews have always sought inspiration in the natural world, and many of our psalms and prayers celebrate the great gift that God has given us in this earth of ours. But sometimes during the year, we focus more on that concept than at other times. There's another holiday coming up, one quite different from Super Bowl Sunday. This coming week, Tuesday night and Wednesday, we'll celebrate Tu Bishvat, the Jewish New Year for trees, kind of a Semitic Arbor Day. The Mishnah, codified in the year 225, roughly 1,800 years ago, tells us that there are four New Years every single year: a New Year for princes, a New Year for taxes, a New Year for judgment, and a New Year for trees. When the sap begins to flow in late winter and trees start to come back to life, it is therefore time to celebrate Tu Bishvat, literally the 15th day of the Jewish calendar month of Shvat, the midwinter month. On Tu Bishvat, we eat a variety of fruits and nuts, basically any produce that can come from a tree, and we thank God for the goodness and vitality of the natural world with which we are blessed. It is customary on the holiday to eat from the seven species that grow natively in the land of Israel: figs, olives, dates, grapes, pomegranates, wheat, and barley. The Shivat HaMinim, the seven species. Tu Bishvat is a festival designed to connect us to nature, to help us rejoice in the beauty of the land and the graciousness of God in gifting us with that land. In the 16th century, in the holy city of Tzfat in the north of Israel, it became customary to hold a Seder, like the one we have for Passover, on the holiday of Tu Bishvat. We are supposed to drink four cups of wine, as we do on Pesach, only this time the cups symbolize the four seasons of the year, rather than God's four promises of freedom as they do at Passover. We use white wine for winter, blush wine for spring, red wine for summer, and a dark, deep red wine for fall. All of this is a way to remind ourselves that the natural world is a gift from God, and we have every reason to appreciate it at this time of year, as sap begins to flow in the trees and the earth gets ready for a new cycle of growth and rebirth. At Tu Bishvat, the buds begin to form, even during a cold winter. Well, even as cold as it gets here in the Sonoran Desert where I live, and the life force that rises in the spring begins to move from dormancy at Tu Bishvat. The more famous Seder on the Jewish calendar is the Passover Seder in the spring, celebrating freedom, but the Tu Bishvat Seder is a lovely additional way to connect with our heritage and with God. This particular year, 5775 on the Jewish calendar, the festival of Tu Bishvat has extra meaning. This is the sabbatical year, the Shemitah in Jewish tradition, when the land of Israel was allowed to rest and no productive agricultural work was to be done. Since we are supposed to be more connected throughout this sabbatical year to our environment, how much more so should that be true for the festival dedicated to environmental awareness, Tu Bishvat? So this week, take time and actually celebrate this minor Jewish festival. Tu Bishvat falls on Tuesday night and Wednesday this week. To play us in this morning on the theme of the natural world, here's Chava Alperstein singing Hagan HaBiladi, The Secret Garden. That was Israeli singer Chava Alperstein and the lovely song Hagan HaBiladi, The Secret Garden, or maybe The Unique Garden, for the coming festival of Tu B'Shvat this week. I mentioned the Shemitah sabbatical year. We've talked about it from time to time over the course of this Tu Jewish year. We will continue to explore the sabbatical, both as a biblical concept and a present-day reality. And a bit later this year, we'll have Nigel Savage, the head of Chazon, the Jewish food organization that has played such a pivotal role in mobilizing the Jewish world to acknowledge and observe the sabbatical year. Now, some of you listeners out there may know that I am personally experiencing a sabbatical year, even as you are listening to Tu Jewish this morning. I have been taking a break from my normal work at my synagogue, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, but I simply couldn't bear to take a break from Tu Jewish after 12 and a half uninterrupted years here with you. There are simply too many great things to talk about, argue about, explore, and investigate in the deep, diverse Jewish world we have the privilege of living in this 5775 year. And I certainly hope you continue to listen and share this Tu Jewish journey with me, whether you've been listening since our very first show way back in the very different world of 2002, are tuning in live for the very first time this morning, or are podcasting or streaming some of our many episodes online. Okay, a clear rule that the Torah somehow omitted, but it should have included. There are no sabbaticals for two Jewish radio show hosts or for two Jewish radio show listeners. We are in this together. I have to admit to some special interest in our guest's subject this morning here on Too Jewish. I have long believed that religion and spirituality were often badly portrayed and poorly understood in our society. We often seem to believe either that religion is supposed to be soft and mushy, a feel-good involvement for do-gooders who want a light, fluffy, poorly thought-out set of ideas and practices that'll make them happier, or that religion represents the radical irrationalism of the fanatic. But true religious ideas are very different from those conceptions. They challenge us and force us to confront reality and the meaning of our own existence and our missions in life in powerful ways. Find out what dangerous religious ideas really are and what they mean today from our special guest, Bill Gray Lectureship Scholar Rabbi Rachel Mikva, when we return soon here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through 8th grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquagaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Professor and Rabbi Rachel Mikva is a Rabbi Herman Shalman Associate Professor of Jewish Studies, Director of the Center for Jewish, Christian, and Islamic Studies at Chicago Theological Seminary. She writes and talks and teaches about dangerous religious ideas, which she will be doing for the Rabbi Albert T. Bilgrade Lectureship at Temple Emmanuel in the coming weeks. Good morning and welcome.
Thank you very much.
So, what makes something a dangerous religious idea?
Well, I ask my students that. This began as a course. When people generally think about dangerous religious ideas, they first think of other people's religious ideas. And I wanted our students at Chicago Theological Seminary which is a progressive seminary, to grapple with how their own religious ideas also carry dangerous power. And so before I hand them the syllabus, I ask what they would put on it. And it takes these pious students about 30 seconds to realize that pretty much any religious idea could make the list, because at some point in the history of exegesis and religious life, it has been wielded in such a way as to cause harm to someone.
You know, it always startles me when people think about religion as conservative and traditional. Most religions begin as really radical, revolutionary experiences.
Absolutely. And so some of the dangerous religious ideas we look at are ones that we might embrace or at least find appealing. So in the Jubilee, the redistribution of property is a radical and revolutionary and potentially very dangerous idea, but one that has the vision of a society in which there is not a perpetual underclass. And that's, of course, exhilarating and important. The Romans thought that that Sabbath was a terrible and dangerous religious idea. Rutilius called it a plague of ignoble sloth.
You know, it's so funny. I love reading some of those Roman sort of diatribes about, you know, the Jews are so preposterously lazy. Not only do they give themselves the day off, they give their wives the day off, they give their slaves the day off.
Their servants, right? The egalitarian nature of it surely invoked their ire.
Yeah, I mean, and then they're so crazy, they give their animals the day off as though the animals had any idea.
Come out to your oxen. Hey, it's Shabbat.
Yeah, come on, let's go light candles. In fact, religions begin really as radical moves, usually, not as kind of more traditional ones. We will continue to explore the concept of dangerous religious ideas with Rabbi Rachel Mikvah when we return in just a moment here on Too Jewish. Now I want to express my thanks. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm glad and grateful that the modest cash awards we started with some 10 years ago have grown into a rather substantial amount, with the help of donors like many of you. The Kohan Foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and A. Irma Kohan of blessed memory, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the whole Jewish people. That service can be in one of four areas: unity, education and information, creative arts, or rescue. Our past award winners include some truly amazing people, and we are grateful for the chance to reward them and their fine work. Do you know of someone who could qualify for a Kohan Award in 2015? Or will you consider participating in this work yourself? Please go to our website, www.kohanaward.com, KOHANAward.com, where you can find all the information on nominating and on participating in this great work. And we'll be glad to hear from you. Our goal is to help people who work for the whole Jewish people. We welcome David and Pam of Freedom Smoke International, new sponsors here on Too Jewish. What is Freedom Smoke International?
Thank you, Rabbi Kohan. Freedom Smoke USA is an electronic cigarette company based right here out of Tucson. We were the first store in the United States, the first store to have all FDA-approved products. It's a healthier alternative to cigarette smoking.
No smoke, no tobacco, and doctors refer people to you.
That's correct. My doctor actually just gave me a glowing report from other patients he's had that I've been able to find this as a healthier alternative to smoking.
Cardiologists, pulmonologists, even dentists, huh?
That's correct. It does help with all that.
How many flavors can people get of this?
We have over 700 flavors available.
Where are the locations and how do people get connected?
Our first location is at River and Orange Grove. We opened one at Broadway and Swan, and we currently just had our grand opening at 12th and Valencia.
And we do have a store in Southern Michigan also.
And what phone number can people call?
You can call the toll-free number at 1-800-705-7013. That's freedomsmokeusa.com.
Thank you, and we'll talk some more next week. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at toojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, jewishradio18 at Gmail, or visit our website at toojewishradio.com. You can stream all past and present shows through our website, toojewishradio.com, or download us at the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcasts. And now it's time for a recurring, inscrutably irregular feature of Too Jewish, Wisdom from Zen Judaism. Today's Haikus for Jews. No eggs and no cream, just syrup, seltzer, and milk. Zen of the egg cream. Today I am a man. Tomorrow I return to the seventh grade. Yes, those were haikus for Jews, eternal wisdom from Zen Judaism. We welcome our Mivina in Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach.
It's a holiday of Tu Bishvat, a wonderful...
And it's the Knesset birthday.
Oh, it's the birthday of the Knesset. Wow. You know, there's a famous story about how two brothers each loved each other. One had a family, one didn't. And they came together in the middle of a field, each trying to bring food to the other at the time of harvest. And they showed so much love and giving each other stuff that on that spot, the temple was built. And then there's another story that says two brothers One had a family, one didn't, and they came together and decided to steal from each other. They met in the middle. They got into a big fight, and on that spot, the Knesset was built. So I tend to think about the Knesset as not necessarily the source of amity in Israel, but the source of all conflict and argument.
Yeah.
So it's a birthday to commemorate, but let's talk about Tu B'Shvat instead. Tu B'Shvat, the new year for trees, a wonderful holiday. This year, a special holiday because of the Shemitah, the sabbatical. We've been talking about that a lot on Tu Jewish and my synagogue and other places, but America is a long way from Israel. Talk about how the sabbatical year, this Shemitah, has had an impact in Israel.
So the very first thing that all the chaklaim, all the farmers will sell their lands to a non-Jewish.
Right, so anybody in agriculture technically sells his land to somebody who isn't Jewish for the year.
Yeah, actually it's not really sell. It's like we are selling the chametz in Pesach. It's like kind of lease for a year.
For a year, right.
And then the land can be still be fruitful, although it's not the idea, but...
It's a Talmudic way around the sabbatical. I understand.
Yes, but the real idea, and I don't need to tell you, you are the rabbi, that it's not just the land; it's the people to be to be free,
renewed,
and learn Torah, and then become and the next Sukkot is a refreshing people or refreshed people. Anyway, I think one of the trends in Israel that are very interesting that the Shemitah, along with others. Jewish identity items, I would say, become something much more popular, and not just for Bet Knesset or for religious school. It's part of the discussion. Many people use it, and there is a lot of, I don't know if you'd heard this term, secular yeshiva.
Yeah,
which is kind of
this. It's very interesting. People not religiously motivated, but come together to study Talmud.
Yes,
and Torah.
And there is two major kind, like adults one, many celebrities getting together in Tel Aviv or a center of Jerusalem and just learning together Talmud. So the Shemitah and again other items from items from Jewish and they became very, very popular. And also the second one is that students immediately after when they are graduate Yud Bet, 12th grade and before they are going to army, it's a huge trend that those kind of kids are going to a gap year and they are going for the secular yeshiva, which called like mechina, all kind of names. And again, what I'm trying to say that this kind of population discussing Shemitah and actually even recreating or giving them new meaning to Shemitah, not just, because we have not so much farmers in Israel.
Yeah, not too many people in agriculture anymore.
But it became a great deal in Israel, Shemitah.
So a form of spiritual and intellectual and educational reinvigoration. It's a great concept, and I hope it works here the same way. Thanks, Ashrat. Chag Sameach.
Chag Sameach, Rabbi.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant. Thursday is my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker.
And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
You know, you have traveled more than any other human being I know, I think. But we were talking off mic about Jews in the Far East, and you mentioned a Korean visitor you had recently. Maybe you should share that story with our listeners.
Right. So historically, in the great trading centers of the British Empire, there were Jewish communities that go back at least into the 19th century, if not earlier. Places like Hong Kong, Singapore, etc.
Right.
And many of those were Jews who were originally from Iraq or Syria or eventually India, who became great merchants and endowed synagogues and Jewish schools in these places, which still have not huge, but
Some significant Jewish communities.
Yeah. and communal life. In fact, Hong Kong has so many expatriate business people that, you know, pretty much every weekend there's a couple of bar mitzvahs and a Jewish wedding or two. And there's even enough diversity that there are both Reform and Orthodox Jews. There may not be any conservative Jews. I don't know. But
yeah, but there's a Reform rabbi there usually.
Right.
I mean, there's a fair amount of resources.
Right. Korea, on the other hand, is a different kettle of fish. As far as I know, there's never been any sort of indigenous Jewish community. And although there are probably like Jewish members of the U.S. military there, and certainly there are Jewish members of various countries' diplomatic corps, I don't think there's really any Korean Jewry or Korean Jewish community to talk about. And in a big city like Seoul, which has 30 million people, you'd be hard-pressed to ever meet a Jew. So on these many trips I've made to the Far East, I've made some friends. And, you know, usually they're people who are interesting and bright and successful. And one of these friends I have visited a couple times in Korea, and he recently spent some time with me in St. Louis and New Orleans and the Deep South. We went to Alabama and Mississippi at his request. And during the course of a few days, very old anti-Semitic canards came out, which I was very surprised because this guy is bright, has an MBA. I knew he was like a God-fearing Christian, goes to church regularly. It turns out that something like 75 or 80% of Koreans are Protestant. Result of lots of missionary work.
Right.
And they spend a lot of time reading at least some portions of the New Testament. And so I was told, among other things, that the Jews killed Jesus. And I know this because the Bible tells me it's true.
Mm.
And I was questioned about how guilty I felt about killing God, I were personally involved in the crucifixion of Jesus. And then, most shockingly to me, were really fundamental old vicious stereotypes of Jews being rich and tightwads and stingy and kind of malevolent in general. And at the end of the time that I hosted this guy, well, first of all, I no longer liked him, obviously. But right. Second of all, he said, you know, I'm really quite surprised because you've been extremely kind and generous in spite of being a Jew and in spite of being like a money changer in the temple.
Thanks so much.
Right. So it was like this kind of bittersweet thing that he recognized that I'd been kind and generous, but that it went very much against his idea. So I said, do you know any Jews in Korea? Oh, no, there aren't any. I said, so where do you get these ideas? Well, my friends and my pastor and, you know, everybody knows. Well, how do you know if there aren't any Jews there? Well, it's just common knowledge. So there was this interesting kind of dialogue of the deaf. I don't think I changed his mind any, but I think he now knows that there may be some exceptions to his stereotypes.
Boy, it's stunning to think of anti-Semitism flourishing in a country that really has never had a Jewish community.
Exactly.
It's a little distressing in the year 2015.
Right.
Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week.
Hi, I'm Ben. Attention Arizona taxpayers, you can help provide a Jewish education to families at no cost to you by redirecting your Arizona state tax dollars to JETCO, the Jewish Education Tax Credit Organization. You can help make Jewish education affordable.
Here's how it works. Arizona lets taxpayers receive a dollar-for-dollar tax credit for payments made to JETCO. This lets JETCO give scholarships to kids who attend private schools like Congregation Anshe Israel's Kindergarten and Tucson Hebrew Academy, serving students from K through 8. Tax credits are different from a tax deduction or donation. When you give to JETCO, you get 100% tax credit. That means your Arizona state income taxes are reduced by the exact amount you've given. Supporters of JETCO can give up to $1,053 for a single filer or $2,106 for a married couple filing jointly and get that whole amount back from state income tax.
Give JETCO a call at 647-8442. That's 647-8442. Or you can go to JETCO.org.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term, inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
And now it's time for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a Public Service. Three Eastern European Jews named Beryl, Harold, and Schmerl are talking about moving to America. Beryl says, "When I emigrate to New York, I'm going to have to change my name. They won't call me Beryl anymore. They'll call me Buck." "Huh," Harold says, "When I emigrate to New York, I'll also have to change my name. They'll call me Huck." Then Schmerl says, "I'm not going anywhere." You see, Schmerl would be called Schmuck. Forget it. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, a special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Can you recite the Ten Commandments by heart? I suspect not. Most people can't. We usually remember, "Thou shalt not murder," only misstated as "Thou shalt not kill," and "Thou shalt not steal." Most people kind of recall that there's something about honoring father and mother and not swearing. Others get the adultery part right, or perhaps remember the idea of the Sabbath. But few people remember all Ten Commandments. But whether we know them by heart or not, these Aseret HaDibrot, these 10 statements from this week's Torah portion of Yitro, are supposed to be the only words God ever spoke directly to our people. But they are not really at the heart of our Judaism today. So, why not? In point of fact, we Reform Jews have trouble with many of the 10 and struggle to find relevant ways to observe them. Nearly every commandment brings with it a problem, even the most positively phrased. What does it mean, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy, if we spend most of our Shabbat working? I recall attending the Reform Movement Convention and hearing then-President Rabbi Eric Yaffe thank the delegates at services for celebrating a non-electronicized Shabbat, free of iPhones and ITCs and Blackberries. His remarks were immediately posted on Facebook by many of the delegates and tweeted by others using the same smartphones they were supposed to have put away for the Sabbath. Look, nearly all of the commandments have complications. How do we suitably honor our fathers and mothers if they are challenging or even abusive people? Not murdering or stealing seems clear enough, but how can we possibly avoid being jealous of our neighbor's better job or nicer car? And don't we take God's name in vain all the time without apparent repercussions? But I believe that the commandment we have the gravest difficulty observing, that is, for Reform, Liberal, Conservative, Reconstructionist, Progressive, and all the other non-Orthodox Jews, is actually the first one. It's the simple statement that there is a God who commands us at all. Classically, this first statement, which contains no commandment, has been considered by Christians as a kind of preamble to the Ten Commandments, but we Jews have always insisted on viewing it as a unique and critical statement, and you know what? They were ours first. But why? It is because, as logical as the Aseret Hadib wrote, the Ten Commandments may seem as a simple declaration of ethics, if we do not accept the existence of a mitzvah, a commander, they essentially lose their authority. With no mitzvah, no commander, there's no mitzvah, no recipient of the command. And in practical terms, no real mitzvot, no commandments that we have to keep. In philosophical terms, the warrant for the authority of the Ten Commandments is in that first simple statement. God exists, God acts, God commands. It is why these are not called the Ten Suggestions, or the Ten Recommendations, or the Ten Nice Ideas if you can manage them. It is only when we accept the existence of God, when we diminish our own elaborate sense of self, that we are able to partner with God to create a moral world. Only when we engage with the commander do we find the commandments. It's up to us, on this week of Parshat Yitro, to find for ourselves the one who commanded them, however we conceive of the Holy One, and to accept our role as recipients of ethical commandment. When we choose to do so, we will find that then we can be moral beings. We can help shape this world in good ways. We can observe the Ten Commandments just as they were intended to be observed, by heart. Our Jewish poetry slam this morning comes from the great Israeli poet Yehuda Amichai. Moses saw the face of God just once and then forgot. He didn't want to see the desert, not even the promised land, only the face of God. In the fury of his longing, he struck the rock, climbed Mount Sinai and came down again, broke the tablets of the law, searched through fire and smoke, but he could remember only the strong hand of the God and his outstretched arm, not God's face. Moses is like a man who tries to remember the face of someone he loves, but tries in vain. Only at the end of his life on Mount Nebo did Moses see and die, kissing the face of God. That was poet Yehuda Amichai on the revelation of God's presence. When we return, in a moment, here on Two Jewish, our guest, Rabbi Rachel Mikva, will help us explore just what constitutes a dangerous religious idea and why that's often a good thing. Find out when we return in a few moments here on Two Jewish.
If you like fun and games, you'll love this. And this. And even this. Casino del Sol Resort offers more fun under the sun with the newest slots, the best entertainment, and world-class golf. If you want fun, hit the... at Casino del Sol Resort in Tucson. Take I-10 East to I-19 exit Valencia West or visit CasinoDelSolResort.com.
Well, they're out there having fun in that warm Arizona sun.
Enterprise of the Pasquigaki Tribe.
We continue with our Two Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Batsheva Appel.
French President François Hollande spoke at the Memorial de la Shoah on the 70th anniversary of the liberation from Auschwitz, which is also United Nations International Holocaust Memorial Day. He met with five Holocaust survivors and five young Jews. Hollande's speech included an acknowledgement of the rise in anti-Semitism, an announcement of another round of anti-terrorism initiatives, and a pledge for the improvement of how the Shoah is taught in the school systems. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has been invited to speak about Iran's sanctions before a full session of the United States Congress next month by House Speaker John Boehner. The White House was not told in advance of the invitation, and their response has been that President Barack Obama would not meet with a foreign leader just before elections. Netanyahu will be among a mostly admiring crowd when he speaks. The last time he addressed the U.S. Congress in May 2011, he received 29 standing ovations. Argentine prosecutor Alberto Nisman was found dead in his apartment in Buenos Aires the day before he was to testify before lawmakers about serious accusations he made about top Argentine officials, including President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner. 10 years ago, he was assigned to investigate the 1994 suicide bombing of a Jewish center that left 85 people dead. Nisman's accusations included the involvement of President de Kirchner in a conspiracy with Iran to cover up their responsibility for the bombing as part of a deal for Iranian oil. The Argentine Jewish community is Latin America's largest, with 250,000 Jews. This is Rabbi Batsheva Appel, and that's the two Jewish news of Jews around the world.
We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Rabbi Rachel Mikva is a prominent professor of Judaic Studies. She is the Rabbi Herman Shalman Associate Professor of Jewish Studies and the director for the Center for Jewish, Christian, and Islamic Studies at Chicago Theological Seminary. In 2009, she was awarded a grant by the American Academy for Jewish Research to develop electronic formats for Hebrew scriptures. She has continued to do both serious scholarship and teach in interesting, challenging, and deep ways about religious ideas. She's here for the Rabbi Albert T. Bilgrey Lectureship and will be teaching about dangerous religious ideas. So what are the most dangerous religious ideas that you've identified or you and your classes have come up with?
I'm not sure I can address them in a hierarchical order of danger. But I can tell you why I choose to address the topics I do with my students. So one idea that I begin with is chosenness and election. And my students, who are primarily but not exclusively Christian, tend to think, well, that's a Jewish question. Because even though the seminary is affiliated with the UCC, they're not of the classic Calvinist theology any longer. So they don't even think of election very much as a Christian question. But when we look at the history of exegesis, and we see how election is very much related to the rubric of chosenness. And I used to have a separate unit on salvation, but it leads so ineluctably into talking about salvation that I now just combine it as one large unit. And this is an important thing for the students to grapple with, the interconnectedness of all of the foundational religious ideas in different religions and how they play out in different religions, but they're embedded within each of them. My favorite unit is on reward and punishment. Now, there's a dangerous religious idea.
Wow. You know, it's very interesting. It has always impressed me that, talking about reward and punishment, that the Christians are very good at the punishment part and the Muslims are very good at the reward part, at least where it regards to men. What are Jews good at in reward and punishment?
Well, I think we all tend to, in Western society, miss the deep complexity of justice ideas that are woven into our scriptures and the history of exegesis. And I might quibble with the presentation that you presented about who's good at what.
Please do.
There's a book called Plane Off, the very famous book by Max Weber. T. Richard Snyder wrote a book called The Spirit of Punishment and Protestantism. The Protestant Idea and the Spirit of Punishment, perhaps, is the way the title is framed. And he does try to connect the idea of retributive justice in with Protestant theology. And it's a compelling but not completely persuasive argument. Nonetheless, I would argue that in the West we have a justice system that is enormously dependent on retributive thinking and reward and punishment as the foundation. And our scriptures have a much richer, thicker idea of what makes for justice.
So I want to take a step even farther back. It has always impressed me that when Abraham believed in one God. It was maybe the most radical religious step anybody's taken or had taken to that point in a world filled with polytheism. Was that a dangerous religious idea for the period?
Well, I think that sometimes what makes ideas dangerous is that they conflict with the world that is, and they imagine the world that could be different. And that's, of course, very dangerous to the powers that be. Foucault talks about, you know, the power dynamics in all of this. And then there are people who have suggested, feminists for a while were suggesting that monotheism is really bad for women. And I think that notion has been challenged in ways that are very persuasive to me, that in fact, the world of gods and goddesses wasn't very good for women either, and that patriarchy was already well established, and that monotheism didn't need to and didn't necessarily contribute in substantive ways to the patriarchal structure. It maintained it, and it can be dismantled, but it takes some work. So was it a dangerous religious idea? Yes, somebody thought so.
You know, Paul is thought of as, a Christian leader, but in fact, in many ways, you can see him as the originator of Christianity himself. He had many dangerous religious ideas. Nowadays, they're considered standard, but they weren't in his time. Paul can be considered in some ways the originator of Christianity. He had many sort of radical ideas. His mission to the Gentiles changed Christianity into this sort of dynamic force that made it highly problematic to the Roman Empire for a long time. Were his ideas so dangerous, or was it just another political threat? What was there something there that really radically changed the way people thought about things?
I think that Paul's mission to the Gentiles was considered to be politically dangerous by the Romans, but it also was dangerous simply because it was considered to be new, right? The old religions were religio licita, right? They get grandfathered in as accepted. And one of the theories for why Paul is so eager to take on the mantle of Israel is to be considered a religio licita within the Roman Empire.
That is a legal recognized religious tradition.
Exactly. Right.
Completing the circuit of the three monotheistic faiths, Islam and Muhammad, a very dynamic, radical change in the way that the world worked. Is there still something very dangerous inherent in Islam?
No. I mean, only to the same extent that the issue that makes religious ideas potentially more dangerous than comparable ideas running around outside of rubrics of religion. Again, as an example, as we didn't invent patriarchy, nonetheless, when you fold it inside the rubric of religion, you give it divine sanction. You give it a sense of absolutism that can sometimes override other considerations. And Islam faces that to the same extent that other religions face that. There's nothing more inherently dangerous. Certainly in the Arabian Peninsula, when Muhammad was preaching, it was considered dangerous to the Arab paganism of his time. And the powers that be of the Quraysh clan were very threatened by his preaching and his teaching, and the community had to flee.
You've written in your book, Broken Tablets, it would be idolatrous to assert any human creation is the one true religion. Is that in some ways the most dangerous religious idea, that people think that they have the exclusive control of faith?
The short answer is quite possibly. I think that the potential embedded within religion to imagine not only that there is a single divine truth, which is perhaps not so dangerous, but to imagine that we have it in our hands, then it becomes dangerous. If there is, in fact, a single divine truth, then it's always mediated humanly, and we have to allow for all of the things that we cannot know. And throughout history, the religions that I know best, which are Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, have built into their capacities this ability to self-critique and to leave room for doubt. But there's a sort of a sacred ignorance that we acknowledge.
And in acknowledging it, accept that we can't possibly have the sole path, or if we do, we don't know it, so we can't act as though we do.
We may think we have the best path, although one of my favorite ideas in Quran is at one point the text asserts that God deliberately made, you know, multiple paths and multiple people so that we could come to know one another. And that, in the way that I read that text, I very much am inspired by the idea that we come to learn much more by engaging one another across religious difference, not to discern the truth or to argue about the truth, but to have each other's truths inspire, challenge, and deepen our own.
I want to pick up on that concept of inspiring challenge. I had a professor once who said, everybody says, oh, I want to feel comfortable in my religious setting. He said, I thought the role of religion was to make uncomfortable people feel comfortable and comfortable people feel uncomfortable. Is that true, and is that a little bit dangerous?
Well, I think that it's less dangerous than a religion that, you know, if Marx was right, then we're in trouble. If in fact it simply puts the masses to sleep and allows injustices in the world to seem all right because God's going to take care of it all in the end, that would be more dangerous. It would be more dangerous if we only afflicted the comfortable and had no resources for creating pleasure and community and joy and meaning in people's lives. So the fact that it exists in that dialectical tension, I think, is the healthiest thing that religion can be.
In exploring these ideas, you've been doing this with your classes for a while. What do you think is the end result that you're hoping to achieve at the end of a semester, at the end of a term, at the end of the lectures that you're presenting?
I would like for the students to be able to refine the way that they understand and teach and preach these ideas so that in the end we can improve the religious project. I want them to be able to do it better by understanding their ideas, their own ideas, more self-critically. I also want them to have the skills to understand how to challenge other religious ideas that they consider to be dangerous without holding up for themselves that they have the absolute truth.
One family question, I have to ask it. Your dad, famous congressman, White House counsel, judge, Abner Mikva was recently given the Presidential Medal of Freedom. That's kind of cool. Can you talk about that experience a little bit?
We were thrilled that this honor was given him. He has served at high levels in all three branches of government and devoted his life to public service, and even in quote-unquote retirement still continues to do so. So I think that some members of our family might have been more excited about meeting the other honorees because they take my father for granted. You know, Stevie Wonder was there and Meryl Streep was there.
Brokaw, Isabel Allende.
Right, Isabel Allende. It was very exciting. The Kennedy clan, because we were waiting alphabetically in order to greet the president and the first lady before the ceremony, the Kennedy clan, and all, you know, 20, 25 of them were all in front of us, so we were trying to figure out, you know, how many Joe Kennedy there were within the 25 of them. Stevie Wonder gave a little sang with the military band at the reception afterwards for a bit. So there were fun other things. But my father said at the end of the day, which included a wonderful dinner organized by the Mikva Challenge with all of his old clerks and congressional staffers, and they all told tales out of school as he was climbing into the cab with me, he said, I may have had better days, but I can't think when.
That's pretty terrific.
It was wonderful.
We are looking forward to some great days hearing from you soon at the Bill Gray Lectureship. I want to thank Rachel Mikva for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday at 9 a.m. Our guest will be Rabbi Chaim Herring, discussing fixing today's synagogues. Always a fertile subject. Our playout this morning for the coming festival of Tu B'Shvat this week is from Israeli-Moroccan singer Yehoram Gaon, the song Shir Hasadeh, the Song of the Field. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good holiday of Tu B'Shvat, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Al sadenu rada erev, alata al nirva gam, uvatele merachanevet, od tzomeach adagan, mi agen al tatsadenu, et lachemenu minzor knafale le mishemar la boker ha halom halom niftan la or mi agen al tafsaden et lachemenu minzor knafale למי שמראה לבוקר החלום חלום נפתן לאור Amal kapenu tzfon nazera ad yigdal yom yafo tahanu v'shefa habrachah.